Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 240 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return to discuss the Canadian Grand Prix at Montreal, a circuit that often delivers late race chaos, and it was no different in 2025. But first of all, Jamie, how are we doing, sir?
I'm doing well, yes. Back in the UK, which I feel like I probably might as well say at every start of the podcast.
It's always good to know. Yeah, jet setter.
I know. There we go. And I had a good weekend over in Bucharest. Explored an abandoned building, crashed a scooter, went to a spa. Yeah, can't complain.
It sounds like every stag do I've ever heard of.
It was basically a generic stag do, but it was quite jokes. And yeah, had a good time. And did catch most of the race on the train back from the airport. So, yeah.
Fair enough.
It's all
fair
good. Ready to talk about F1.
We certainly are. It's the first Grand Prix I was able to watch in the new crib, so that was quite enjoyable as well. But, I mean, obviously we spoke a fair bit, obviously, pre-weekend last time out, obviously, about everything we kind of expected to see happen. First of all, Jamie, I mean, it's never something you can completely discount, but I don't think either of us expected to see Charles Leclerc bin it almost immediately in free practice one, did we?
Turn three, wasn't it? Which is a strange corner to nearly crash at, but you know,
or completely crash at.
Well, yeah, it's a very strange one. But as we said before the weekend, they had the softest tire range available, and obviously Montreal is one of those circuits where they go once a year, and there's not much else happens throughout the year, so it does take a bit of time to clear the dust and settle into like make the track less green than it is at the start of Friday. But clearly, yeah, the drivers were really caught out by the low grip nature because a lot of drivers were actually spinning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's the same most years, but as far as I'm aware, this is the first time the circuit's been used this year. And I mean, I'm pretty certain from about September through to May, or September through to the end of April, the circuit is basically just unusable because Canada has such a problem with snow and things like that. So often, I think they normally get a few little bits and pieces running pre-Grand Prix, but this year, I think it was the first running anything had really done on the circuit, apart from Formula Academy and all that kind of thing. But yeah, like we said, we saw a lot of drivers making errors in free practice. Of course, soon-to-be world champion Oscar Piastri, living up to the name at the final corner, slapped that wall and gave himself a puncture. And Nico Hülkenberg, because of course he's always the nearly man, almost wrecked his own car there. Have you seen the clip of Davide Valsecchi?
I actually haven't seen it. I didn't watch much of practice at all. Brilliant. But
Davide Valsecchi was setting up to do some commentary down there, obviously right next to that wall. And then trying to set up, Hülkenberg bins it in front of him. And because he's Davide Valsecchi, the reaction was absolutely fantastic.
Bet. Oh, the Hülkenberg.
Hülkenberg, whoa! It was brilliant. We've got a couple of shout-outs to do, though, early on this episode, haven't we, Jamie?
Because
we, last week, if you guys don't remember, we gave you guys a challenge, basically, of can you name us the least amount of drivers it would take to compete in every single Formula One Grand Prix ever? Now, we actually got a couple of different responses through, didn't we? The first one I got through was from Evan, or at Verlonso1433. A pretty terrible combo, if you ask me, but there we are. who gave it to us 15 drivers. All the way back, and that was sent to us at 7:58 local time on
Friday, wasn't it?
On Friday night, I believe, the 12th, so yeah, Friday. But you actually got a response through even quicker.
No, later. It was Friday night.
Later. Too. Okay.
Yes, but it was less drivers.
It was earlier. It was less drivers. Yeah, this one was 15 drivers,
yes,
but yours
so
was...
My good friend Alex Chittick, who I've been to many races with, was 13 drivers back to the beginning, which is mental. It's that few in, what, 1,200 races? Almost,
yeah, just under.
Like that.
Yeah, 1,134.
Yeah.
Or 35 now, I suppose, with Montreal in the books.
Yeah, true. So he went Lewis Hamilton, combined with Kimi Raikkonen, gets you back to 2002, minus USA 2005, which he's put Patrick Freesacker in.
Yep.
John Lacey, Alboreto, Patrese, Jacques Lafitte, Niki Lauda, Jackie Stewart, then takes you into the 60s.
Yep.
Phil Hill, Graham Hill, and then Fangio back to the beginning, apart from Indy races. And there is a man called Tony Bettenhausen, who is
who
the
did
GOAT.
All of them.
Who didn't qualify for Indy 500 in 1949, entered every Indy 500 from 1950 until 1960, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So he did all 11 in that period. And then in 1961, he died before the Indy 500, so didn't enter it, obviously. So yeah, he came in clutch, because he only needed it up to 1960.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those ones where I think we thought it might be a bit more awkward than it was in the end. But yeah, well, thank you to...
Lots of calculations. So I've got a whole spreadsheet of every race. I'm like, wow, this man needs to find some friends.
Touch grass.
I'm not going to lie.
Find some friends, a.k.a. you.
Well, yeah, I was away. But then we see each other once a year anyway, so...
Fair enough. Yeah, you two literally only see each other to go to Grand Prix. It's quite an impressive relationship. Anyway, Jamie, obviously we also, the last thing we had, obviously, well, massive thank you to you guys as well for obviously sending those over to us. I guess the last kind of bit of controversy, or some people thought it was controversy, others didn't, was Tsunoda's 10 place grid drop. I mean, if Ollie Bearman's was pretty clear cut and dry in Monaco, this one was as well, in my opinion.
Well, it's a rule is a rule, isn't it? Especially when it's had precedent, like two races ago. He had no leg to stand on, really. Overtaking under a red flag in 2025 is a 10 place grid penalty. It was a shame for him that it got announced during Q1.
Yes, that did make me chuckle. The fact that couldn't have been decided beforehand.
Yeah, I hadn't seen anything about practice and then started watching quali, and it's 5 minutes in, they said, oh, Tsunoda's got a 10 place penalty. It's like, oh, okay, interesting.
Yes, yeah, it was quite... it basically just meant, obviously, unless he got into Q3, which is unlikely in that second Red Bull, he was going to be starting from the back of the field, didn't it? Moving on into Saturday, obviously, qualifying. We pretty much immediately had bizarre moments, as we tend to here in Montreal, because Alex Albon's car decided to explode itself, which was quite impressive in Q1.
Yeah, the engine cover was gone, wasn't it? It's a shame for all the Mercedes competitors that it's the end of the rule cycle, so seeing the engine under wraps doesn't really make that much difference.
Well, we've been under a development freeze anyway for
for many years. So if this was 2026 and the engine cover explodes, I think Mercedes might be having a few words with Williams.
Yeah, I'm sure they would be.
But thankfully it doesn't really matter, and actually it didn't really matter for Albon either, because the red flag that he caused allowed them to fit a new engine cover that didn't explode, and he still made it in Q2. Actually, Q3, didn't he?
He made it all the way to Q3 at the end. So it was very quickly kind of... Well, very, very quickly, actually, the kind of shift within the focus on Williams was all on Sainz, wasn't it? Because he would get knocked out in Q1. Thanks to, let's be fair, a pretty, again, clear-cut penalty. Not Isaac Hadjar's fault, of course, because it's up to the team to tell him when there's other cars on a push lap, but a very, very bad block in the end. Yeah. Sainz was eliminating Q1 by some ridiculous, like, 200ths of a second, and that block cost him probably about 0.4.
Something
and we could have very easily seen Williams, both cars in Q3.
Probably. But I think Hulk was 15th, so I don't care. Well done, Isaac Hadjar, I'll say.
he did you a solid there.
He did. But it was obviously a 3-place penalty, which is what he got. They did tell him he'd aborted. I don't know how they worked that one out, because, he was quite clearly on the lap. And into turn 6, I want to say, the left-right chicane. Yeah, Sainz got absolutely done in, and that was his qualifying over.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was knocked out in Q1 alongside Gabriel Bortoleto, Stroll, Gasly and Liam Lawson. It was a very tight Q1, though. It's a ridiculous. I think if Gasly had improved by a tenth of a second, it would have beaten the record from Austria. I think it was last year or a couple of years ago where it was like 8.5 tenths covering all 20 cars in Q1. Because I think here we were like 8, 9 thousandths of a second. So it was very, very tight in Q1. Q2, though, was a little bit kind of more normal, wasn't it? Tsunoda out, rather unsurprisingly, alongside Colin Pinto, who does, to be fair to him, outqualify Gasly. So... Maybe starting to show some promise.
He had a better weekend, actually.
He did finally start. Felt like he was starting to string it together a bit more. But clearly it was us giving him a bit of stick in last week's
exactly.
show.
Not the rest Hulk, of the world.
Hulk out obviously in Q2 as well, so that P15 entrance to Q2 clearly made the difference.
Well, he beat both Haskells
also, right? He did beat both Hasses, yeah. I'd say Sauber have got a better car than Haas now. If the last couple of weekends are anything to go by.
Better driver, but maybe.
Fair enough. Yeah, I suppose I probably wouldn't. Well, actually, no, because Behrman got better than the Hulk when they were teammates, so...
Brilliant.
Makes sense how that's...
Massive
clearly,
sample size.
Clearly, the Sauber is just a far superior car, and Ollie Behrman should be given it. But by the time we got to Q3, though, Jamie, we noticed a bit of an odd pattern, hadn't we? That the medium was a much better tyre than the soft for pretty much everybody, unless your name's McLaren, because they never tried it.
Yeah, it was odd. Because, yeah, we had the C456, so the soft was like chewing gum, which is what we like. But it didn't really last that a lap. It was a bit like Imola, where people were on the mediums at the end. But Imola was a bit more balanced, because you kind of had... The tyres were almost the same, and it was just a preference thing. Whereas
I
here,
think
it
when
felt
Montreal
like...
is slightly... Yeah, no, because I was going to say, because it's slightly shorter, it felt a bit more... But obviously, it would
but
work the other
shorter,
way, wouldn't
it?
Yeah. But it is... But
it's counterintuitive.
Yeah. Imola's 63 laps, Montreal's 70. So it's still a bit shorter.
Yeah. The lap time is pretty similar, though, in terms of time, but not distance, maybe. Yeah, I don't know why McLaren didn't use the mediums. Maybe they were saving them for the race, because obviously the soft was never going to get used. Sorry, they only use the soft, so maybe they were saving their mediums for the race.
Yes.
Because, yeah, like we saw in Spain, it's quite important to have enough of the race tyre left at the end, Red Bull. So it was probably a cautious thing. Maybe they thought they could get pole on the soft. But they weren't actually anywhere near in the end.
No, it was a really odd one, wasn't it? Because I wonder if McLaren were kind of still of the mindset of, well, we can look after our tyres much better than everybody else on a qualifying lap, so... Any kind of advantage we get through Sector 1 and Sector 2, we shouldn't bleed away by the end of Sector 3. But when Lando Norris immediately messes up his first run, and then Red Bull and Mercedes seemingly just able to find a huge amount of pace right towards the end, McLaren were basically caught with their pants down, weren't they, by the end of the session?
Yeah.
Lando Norris absolutely messed himself up. He bailed out on his first run, made a mistake, had to do a safe second run on the first set of tyres. So we'd end up in, I think it was like P6 or P7 after the first runs. And then wouldn't improve second time round because, again, he was trying to play it too safe. Oscar Piastri, to be fair to him, I think sensibly got 99% out of the car anyway on the second runs. But, of course, when you've got two cars that are then on quicker tyres, especially with the Mercedes actually looked pretty settled by the end of qualifying here as well as the track got cooler and cooler... Suddenly, you kind of... I mean, he was, what, 25 thousandths away from Verstappen in the end? Which isn't, you know, is a pretty standard gap between, you know, Red Bull and McLaren this year. Or Verstappen and McLaren, I should say.
Yeah, Verstappen
and McLaren. That can go either way. But then George Russell suddenly dunks 0.2 seconds on everybody.
Yeah, which kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it? And
a bit like last year.
Yeah, the Mercedes is always pretty solid around Canada. Like, obviously, Hamilton was always a bit of a specialist around here when he was at Mercedes, and... Russell got pole last year, obviously didn't convert it into a win, but that was mostly down to weather, otherwise I think he might have done. I think Mercedes just showed up, and you could tell because Antonelli was fourth as well, and Antonelli did a good job. But I think Mercedes, on reflection, was probably the fastest car over the course of the weekend, followed by the McLaren and the Red Bull, probably. Very, very good job by Russell and Antonelli, to be honest.
I think, again, until obviously, I mean, we'll discuss it. I think McLaren still had the car to beat this weekend. I think, you
probably.
Know, the way they rocked back up, especially with the ability
helped.
To look after the tyres. The cold weather definitely brought Mercedes pretty much onto the same level as a Red Bull and McLaren as well. You know, and they were able to capitalise on that. I mean, the best bit about it, wasn't it, was... Obviously, we had a Russell Verstappen front row after what happened in Barcelona. And I mean, even after qualifying, George was already trying to goad Max into a fight.
Yeah. What was the quote? I've got more penalty points to play with.
Yes. Yeah.
I do love it. As much as I'm a Verstappen fan, and like, I want to see him succeed. I want to see him do well. It's very good for the sport that we've got someone with a lot of talent who's standing up to Max in that way. Because I think, obviously, we've seen Norris pander to him so much in the past.
Oh, every time.
I think Piastri doesn't play the games at all, but he also doesn't play his own games in his head like Norris does. So Piastri is very quick, very solid. He's not going to get drawn into anything. So,
no.
Like, they will just crash, have a huge crash at some point, and then just shake hands and move on. Neither of them care about what the other one thinks. Whereas Russell and Verstappen, that's an ego fight, isn't it? That's handbags.
Yeah, it is very, very catty, isn't it? And I think, you know, I know we have slightly differing opinions on it, and I know I was talking to my family about this watching the Grand Prix last night. You can see why, like, a lot of people don't like George Russell. But I'm kind of there going, I absolutely love the fact, you know, because he can dig
in. It's good for
Max.
The sport. It's very good for the sport.
He can Russell Max up a bit more than most people can.
Yeah.
Which, and, you know, at the end of the day, as we've said before, as we've seen before, that's how you can beat Max Verstappen. That is his greatest weakness, is, you know, the emotions that he can show sometimes. You know, he will get frustrated and...
Yeah.
Basically a tantrum. You know, we've said this before, haven't we? He can lose his cool, have a bit of a tantrum, throw his toys out the pram, and George Russell is more than happy to keep goading him, basically, which we absolutely love. And as we move into the Grand Prix, though, Jamie, I think we were kind of expecting or hoping for fireworks down towards Turn 1, and then Russell just got a better start, didn't he? That was over instantly.
Too fair to Max. I think he loses his cool when it's a very high-pressure situation, such as that restart in Spain, or when everything's falling apart in Hungary in 24? That was last year, wasn't it? Only one year ago. When he's got a whole night to prepare for this race start, I don't think he was going to lose it into Turn 1.
I think he also knew full well that unless he had, like, a big advantage, he was probably... As George said, he hasn't got points to play with at the moment.
Exactly.
If this had happened after Austria, when he's got 3 points on his license again, and he got a better start, he's absolutely going for it.
Yeah, like, but sending it into Turn 1 at Canada is a bit dumb, unless you're already alongside.
Yeah, and I think it's the thing as well, isn't it, of is there potentially a problem here with the fact that effectively drivers have got 12 points to play with? It's not like your normal road license here in the UK where you've got 6 points, your insurance skyrockets, like you want as few as possible all the time.
Yeah, but that's, you know, the leeway is there for to allow drivers to have a few errors. And obviously, the drivers are very clever, so they're going to use as many as they can. It's like a yellow card in football, isn't it? Players get a yellow card because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at Russell in Monaco getting the penalty passing Albon because he knew, I can break the rules, but it works out in my favour. Obviously, it didn't actually work out in his favour that time.
No.
But usually it would. I think Hülkenberg, Abu Dhabi 17, went on lap one, he just straight lines chicane. Passed Perez, took the 5 second penalty and got sixth place.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? He certainly did. Only you would remember such a rogue penalty for a midfielder from years ago.
Oh, it was very clever.
Such a Hulk fanboy. But like we said, though, George Russell, off the start of the Grand Prix, would be under no pressure down towards Turn 1. Kimi Antonelli, in what would prove a very important overtake later on in the day. What a pass that was on Oscar Piastri on that one.
Very, very good. I think Piastri was getting caught up fighting the Red Bull Verstappen.
No, he was just trying to play the long game, I think, for Oscar Piastri.
In Turn 1, Piastri was almost there.
Yeah.
And then, Antonelli just did really well to carry the speed down towards Turn 3 and got Danny inside. And that was him onto the podium. And obviously, he's never had a podium before in a GP or a sprint, actually, has he? So,
no.
Yeah, very crucial move. And actually, come the end of the race, it was very, very crucial.
Well, it was the move that gave, you know, spoiler alert, was the move that gave him a podium by the end of the weekend. And a really, really good move done by Antonelli. And kind of that whole idea, isn't it, of on a weekend where the Mercedes look good, you've got to take your chances. And, both of them really did.
I'm very impressed by Antonelli because doing a race like that...
Oh, you're finally rating him, are you?
Yes. Yeah, because, like, driving the way he did in this race, obviously we're jumping ahead a little bit, but he had to sustain a lot of pressure from faster cars towards the end. And he just did, and he didn't really make much of an issue of it.
And he drove that's, like someone with a lot more experience than he
has. It reminds me of a Hamilton or a Verstappen in their first seasons, or Verstappen maybe in his third season when he was actually 18. But
second season, he was 17 when he got in.
True.
First season, he was 18.
Yeah, but like Verstappen at Spain 2016, where like he just was had pressure the whole time and just drove like he wasn't a teenager.
Driving strong. With experience beyond their years, I think.
Exactly.
And that is a special talent that Jamie couldn't see Antonelli clearly had, but anybody with eyes could. That had been Hülkenberg doing that, he would have thrown him a parade.
Well, he wouldn't have finished third, would he, if it's Hülkenberg?
Well, exactly, yeah, he would have come fourth. I mean, we did see a little bit more chaos lap one, didn't we? Alex Albon, Franco Colapinto battling down into the third chicane, which gave Hülkenberg two nice, easy overtakes. But kind of very quickly after that, didn't it? The race got quite boring. I mean, as we've said so many times before, haven't we? It just became a quintessential ground effect race. On a circuit where you could make overtakes before ground effect came in, it's just... Because why wouldn't you? It's just DRS passes everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But it, you know, what else is it going to be on a track?
Exactly. Yeah, I'd rather that than no overtakes at all. At the end, we kind of moan about it, but
with a lot of single file chicanes and then a few big straights, it's always going to be the straights where the passes happen.
Yeah, and I think as well with a track like this, you can only try and tweak and change the DRS zones so much. And the problem is obviously because the cars aren't equal, you're never going to end up in a situation where you can guarantee that if you bring the DRS zone down by 20 meters. That they're going to be wheel-to-wheel into the final chicane. Because obviously every car is different.
Yeah, and they're always on different age tyres, and that makes a difference as well, because it's a lot dependent on the exit from the hairpin. So it wasn't...
Well, especially as it was a two-stop for everybody.
It was intriguing. I was enjoying watching it, but then by the time the pit stops actually played out, we were like, oh, nothing's changed and no one's fast enough to make an overtake.
Yeah, there just wasn't enough kind of variety in the tyres, was there? And I think everybody... We kind of ended up in a weird scenario, weren't we? Where everybody was just covering off the car behind, pretty much.
Yeah.
So I think McLaren probably, shot themselves in the foot because I think they were the only team that was seriously considering a one-stop. And just... Or at least at the front.
Yeah, and they pit then too early.
Yeah, realised it wasn't going to be possible, but realised they'd already kind of screwed themselves over. So then try to basically put themselves in a scenario where they would play the advantage at the end of the race, which, as we saw, didn't really work out.
I enjoyed the strategy playing out the way it did, because he had a lot going on at the front.
Yeah, it was still interesting.
The only issue was that at no point did I think there was enough pace delta between the cars.
So yes.
Because Russell, Antonelli, Verstappen all pit pretty much at a similar time. Like, Russell was the latest, but he was in the lead, so that makes sense. He's not.
He had a little bit to play with,
Yeah. Yeah, and then the McLaren's pit, a bit of a delta away, but I never thought, obviously I was wrong, but I never thought they would have quite enough pace to mount a serious challenge on the podium places. But Piastri did that later on, but obviously didn't make an impression.
No, well, I was going to talk about this, though, because let's be fair, he got absolutely screwed by blue flags on multiple occasions, it felt like. I think it was Esteban Ocon and Ollie Bearman. Took far too long to jump out of his way.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think if that was a Lando Norris or a Max Verstappen, they'd be far more animated on the radio. Oscar just doesn't kind of say anything. Which was a little bit frustrating for him. Because I think, honestly, he could have got Antonelli. It was just every time he got close enough, he was then set back again. And, Antonelli was closing in on Max. Oscar was closing in on Antonelli. And Norris was closing in on Oscar. So it kind of all started to get a little bit intense towards the end, didn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, let's talk about the moment, though, isn't it, Jamie? The one thing that we're all going to discuss here.
Yeah.
Fairly obvious. He admitted it himself on the radio, didn't he? Lando Norris, that was all on him.
Yeah. And it gave us a talking point. I think it'll be a talking point for the rest of the season, to be honest. And
I even think, the rest honestly... looking back even now, I reckon this will be the moment we look back of this is where Lando lost the championship.
Well, sensibly. Yeah, because, spoiler, they crashed. Lap 67. I actually think Norris did a good move into the hairpin. I thought he measured it very well to go down the inside into the hairpin. Piastri saw it coming, did a switchback. They're side by side down the straight, which was a great shot, I thought. And they both had DRS, which was helpful for the spectacle. And then Piastri had the inside line, so just sent it as far as he could into the chicane. He knew that if he got the inside line, there's no way Norris is going around the outside of the chicane. So Piastri broke extremely late, took the apex. Norris had to settle behind, but then got obviously a very good exit. Down in towards turn one, Piastri's on the racing line, does not move from the racing line, which I think is very important. And Norris tries to time it to get down the inside when the racing line switches back towards the right, and completely misjudges it and drives into the back of Piastri. Loses front wing, out of the race. Piastri gets away with no damage, or no lasting damage anyway. And yeah, McLaren Civil War is on the cards for about 10 seconds, and then Norris admits to his mistake.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he come into this weekend saying at some point, what's it? He said, at some point we're going to have a crash, it's inevitable. And you're kind of there going, well, it's not. Like, where have you got this idea from that you have to have a crash at some point? That's not what it is.
Mercedes didn't crash in 2015. No, the only year they didn't. Although Hamilton barged Rosberg off a few times.
There wasn't really a title fight there either, though, to be fair.
No, Rosberg, it would have been Hamilton and Vettel, wouldn't it?
But, you know, I'd say the fact that kind of Lando came in with this mindset into the weekend, you knew full well from that comment that he was going to try to do something a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
The thing that annoyed me with this move, Jamie, was I know full well, and I'm sure you'll agree, if that had been Lando versus Max, there's not a chance he would have gone for that. Like, why on earth you're playing a riskier move against your teammate than your other rival this season? I know I tweeted out at the time, and honestly, after sleeping on it, I still feel the same way. I would be having a conversation with Lando Norris after that incident of going, unless you're ahead at the summer break, you're our number two the rest of the season. Like, if we're still worried about Max at all, you're being used, you're being thrown under the bus to defend from him to block it. I mean, you'll do a useless job because Lando can't race Max for some reason because he's too worried about being chummy with him. But I would be, if I was Oscar Piastri after this, I would be ever so slightly quietly confident that that moment might just have won you this championship. Still a lot can change, of course.
There's a long way to go.
That is a defining moment.
But yeah, the problem with Lando is, like, he is so in his own head the whole time that actually, when there's no pressure on, he's very, very fast. I remember when we had the podcast launched in 2021, we were like, Norris is probably a top three or four driver on the grid right now in 2021. And he was. Because there was no pressure.
Exactly. He was always just, you know, obviously it took until after Silverstone, he was still third in the world championship against Perez and Bottas. And their cars were like a second a lap faster.
Yeah, and he, like, when there's no pressure on, there's probably one or two drivers you would pick above Norris for your team. But
well,
in a title
Piastri.
Fight, well, Max Piastri,
Lewis.
Probably it.
Charles. There's quite a few, actually, I'd pick, man.
But he's definitely top six when there's no pressure on. When there's pressure on, he just loses it completely. We've seen it in Bahrain Quali. Like, obviously, he made the mistake. Well, they both made a mistake in Melbourne, didn't they? But he got away with it. Yeah, this quality session in Canada, there's just the amount of Q3s that he's just not quite got together. Because in Imola as well, he's fourth, wasn't he, in quality, or was he third?
Fourth, yeah, I think, if I remember correctly.
And it's just these high-pressure moments that the top caliber drivers don't even blink at, and they just deliver. Those moments, Norris just, more often than not, is losing it. And that was a example. And I do agree with you. If this was Verstappen, he wouldn't have gone for such a bold move. But he was trying to make a statement to the team, looking like, oh, this will be good on the old Instagram reel for F1 when I win the championship at the end of the season. They'll play this
back.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
And yeah. And they
will be playing this back, but it'll be when Oscar Piastri wins the world title.
Yeah, very reminiscent of 2011 McLaren fight. Although, this
one basically
was in the dry.
Identical. But at least that one was in the rain.
Yeah, but it was a hot-headed moment from Norris. It was a misjudgment. To be fair to him, he admitted it straight away, but there
was
nowhere
to hide.
That was
saving grace here. Yeah.
There was nowhere to hide for him. Like,
no.
But yeah, that's 10 points lost. Maybe, you know, he could have, if he'd overtaken Piastri, he's gaining 2 points in the championship. Instead, he's lost 12.
Or yeah, lost 10. It's a 14-point swing,
yeah,
basically, that moment for him. Which yeah, never should have... It could have been a 4-point swing. It never should have been 14. But he completely did it to himself. As we said, he completely... To be fair to him, did then immediately say, yeah, my fault. Which you're like, fair enough. But you also... Why, you know, you're meant to be a world championship contender. That is not a moment where... No. You should be doing that.
And it gave Verstappen and Russell a lot of ground in the championship. So
yeah, against we'll him, see. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We could genuinely, would not shock me if we end up by the end of this year of Oscar Max Lando in the world championship.
Or even Max Oscar Lando, who knows?
It won't be that. It would be the most Lando moment ever to somehow finish third in a two-way championship fight. But... Honestly, I think at this point I'm all here for it. It did completely ruin the end of the Grand Prix as well, didn't it? But in many ways, I was kind of happy for Kimi Antonelli because it meant that the podium that was starting to look at risk towards the end, the dream was alive, and he did finish that P3 just behind exactly. Russell and Max. Now, I mean, there was even a little bit of... I mean, people are trying to make this out to be more than it was. There was even a moment of controversy, wasn't it, with Max trying to jump Oscar under safety car or not trying to jump Oscar under safety car.
What do you mean? You mean Russell? Oscar was behind.
Sorry,
him.
Yeah, a break. Yeah, Russell.
Russell was being a little rat, is what happened.
He was definitely trying to be a little bit cheeky, but then on the other hand, Max shouldn't have been so close behind him.
He wasn't even close. Russell just slammed on the brakes.
He was too close behind him. If he was far enough back, he wouldn't have accidentally jumped him. I mean, Red Bull took this to the steward after the Grand Prix, and this was the
it
most
was never, it was
exactly
never
handbags thing we've seen.
But I think, to be honest, Red Bull probably wanted the FIA to clarify the rule so that in future, if Max is leading, he can do the same thing.
Probably, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure this isn't the end of their beef this
no,
year.
But I'm here for it. If it's a nice little subtone from the subplot from the World Championship, the Russell Verstappen beef.
Drama.
I'm
if
well
that
up
goes
it.
Into next year, that'd be brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I mean, we've got a few little bits and pieces to rattle through very quickly because Jamie's got work in about 2 minutes. I'm going to do your quiz first of all then, Jamie.
Okay.
I'm gutted because Jamie knows this. I was trying to get... I had a quiz planned out in my head. And unfortunately, there's only 3 answers to what I was originally going to do. Which was, originally, Jamie, I was going to ask you, can you name me every 1-2 that Russell and Verstappen have had in Formula 1? But it's only ever happened 3
only
times,
three.
Including yesterday. Can you name them, just out of interest? Yesterday, obviously.
Yeah, Canada 25 was one. I think the rest of Russell's wins...
They're not.
They're often 1-2s with his teammates, obviously not them. No,
yeah,
I can't,
never been teammates,
actually. That's very difficult.
One of them you should immediately know when I say it. You go, oh yeah, of course. Belgium 21.
Oh yeah, of course.
There you go. And then Zandvoort 22 is the only other time they've had a 1-2 finish.
That's when Hamilton nearly won and then messed up.
Well, yeah, they messed him up on strategy towards the end. But excluding Montreal yesterday then, Jamie, there have been 12 drivers to have also scored points when Russell and Verstappen have had a 1-2. You've just got to name me, though. If you get one
right,
wrong, it's over.
So Belgium 21, Zandvoort 22.
Yeah,
I can be a bit late for work. It'll be all right. I'll just adjust the time
sheet. Okay. just adjust the time.
I'll just log on at 9:15. It'll be all right. I can start any time I want until 10. I'm not breaking any rules.
Really? I did not know this. Why have we always rushed so many ends of podcasts?
Because I'd rather be on at 9, but here we are.
Well, fair enough.
Belgium 21. Third place. I don't even... okay, I'm just getting any until I get one wrong.
Yes.
Well, let's start with yesterday then. Okay.
No, not including yesterday.
Oh, not including yesterday.
Yeah. I'm not going to get you to rattle yesterday's top 10. Zandvoort 22,
Belgium
21. Who scored points?
Okay. Lewis Hamilton.
Correct. That's one.
So, no, Perez crashed, didn't he? Did he get in Zandvoort? He probably did. I don't know, Perez could be wrong. I'm going to leave Perez for now. Lando Norris?
Correct.
I was going to say he crashed in Q3, didn't he? But I'm pretty sure he got it. I think Nicholas Latifi was right in Belgium. There we go.
Yep.
Oh, I can't remember who finished third. Was it? Oh, it was Lewis Hamilton. Oh, I said him. It's going great. Who was good in 21. The Ferraris were good, weren't they? Charles Leclerc.
Correct.
Carlos Sainz.
Correct.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Correct.
In Belgium.
He did. He came fourth.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Because Lando messed himself. I don't actually think Lando scored.
I think he did. Oh, did he replace parts? He crashed in Q3. I thought he started 10th.
Yeah. I think he might have started 10th. I can't remember off the top of my head, to be completely honest. I don't think he did. I don't think he scored points there because he's not on my list until further down.
Do Verstappen and Russell count as answers?
No.
Ugh. That'd have been easy.
It would have. Hence why they don't.
Pierre Gasly.
Correct.
Esteban Ocon.
Correct.
Fernando Alonso.
Four more. Three more.
Zandvoort 22. Or. This could be wrong. I'm pretty sure it's not. Valtteri Bottas.
Incorrect.
Really?
Yep.
Bottas. In a Mercedes. What a big fraud.
In a Mercedes. Where did Bottas come in that racing?
I thought between Alfa when they were good or Mercedes when he was in the fastest car, he surely got points.
Did I accidentally skip him? No, Valtteri Bottas was... Oh, he had a penalty, so he started 13th, came 12th.
Oh, dear. I was going to say Kimi Raikkonen.
Also incorrect.
Oh, okay, good.
Interesting, you left off... Nope, didn't score. Interestingly, left off three drivers that all raced for the same team during this time.
Stroll?
Yep.
Wow. Tsunoda?
Or around this time, no. Has Stroll and Tsunoda ever been teammates?
Oh, the same. I thought you meant they raced for, but they didn't change teams in 21-22.
No, sorry. They'd all race for the same team around this era.
Albon?
No.
I don't know.
Stroll and Albon ever been teammates? Deary
me. Oh, it's Stroll's teammate. I said Latifi.
When have they ever been teammates?
I'm thinking Williams now. Stroll and Vettel.
Yes, and you did already say the last one as well, but you didn't commit to it.
Right, Antonelli, no. Who did I say that didn't commit to?
There you go. 9 out of 12. That's pretty good going. I'll give you. You've done well there. Driver of the day, Jamie. It made me chuckle when the graphic came up. George Russell absolutely dominated this one. Had less vote than Max and Kimi.
I back that. I will give it to George Russell, though, because he was...
Russell absolutely... I think Antonelli as well definitely deserves a shout-out.
Yeah, and Max does too.
Max does as well.
The Red Bull... It annoys me that people have just forgotten that the Red Bull's trash. Like,
it's not, though. This is the thing that annoys me. Like, we saw what actually happens when Red Bull have got the fourth fastest car. That's called Bahrain.
That was the sixth fastest car in Bahrain.
It was not. This is
the Alpine like, was people, quicker.
The thing is, people like to go on that the Red Bull is so bad. But I genuinely would say this weekend it was third fastest. McLaren probably should have got the better of it.
Well,
Mercedes
Max
did
driving
get the better
it was third
it.
Fastest. If you put two
average
drivers...
Yeah, but that's all that
drivers,
matters. Yeah, but that's put, not what matters.
But, like, if you took... Even like a Tsunoda and a Perez, for instance, and put them both in the Red Bull, they would be barely scoring points.
Yeah, but if you put... No, because they just set up the car better. This is the thing. Like, this is what annoys me with this. Because if you suddenly put Max in the Mercedes this weekend, Russell would have got the better of him.
I still think people, Max would have made it a 1-2.
Well, probably. But that's not what I said. To be fair, if Verstappen wasn't in the Red Bull, it would have been a Mercedes 1-2 because Antonelli came third. So, yeah, I think Red Bull had the third fastest car this weekend behind Mercedes
Max driving
and McLaren.
It was the third fastest.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously,
Tsunoda
driving
third
it was the eighth or ninth fastest.
So. Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alonso deserves
shout.
He
almost made Q3.
He did.
Alonso
well.
Does deserve shout. More points on the board. Very good job. Hülkenberg as well. Another point. Another four points. Yeah. Helped by McLaren Civil War right at the end, but still, he would have scored anyway.
Getting two, yeah.
Yeah, very good job. Very good job. Predictions! We did.
Given the form of the current season, where McLaren have got a podium at every race, I don't think we could be expected to get many points on this podium.
No, I don't think we could.
And pole position has always been a McLaren or Verstappen so far. So yep. Naturally, you put Piastri on pole. I put
what
Verstappen
was the scores coming into the weekend?
I always forget that bit, but you I am do. Winning. 28.
Yeah, which surprised me that you always forget.
28-24. So 4 points in it for pre-weekend. You put Piastri on pole, no points. Verstappen on pole, no points.
No points.
You said Norris would win.
Yeah.
That went well.
I assume there was going to be some safety car BS that he lucked out on. Didn't happen.
I said Verstappen would win, which is a point.
That is a point.
You said Piastri would come second, which is no points.
Shame.
I said Norris would come second, which is equally is no points.
Yep.
You put George Russell on the podium. There's a point for you.
I saw the vision that George would be better than Max this weekend is what I voted for. And yes. That was right.
That was right. I saw the vision that Verstappen would be better than McLaren, which was also right. I put Piastri third. So the option is we get 1 point each.
Yeah.
Because we both put a McLaren double podium and no McLaren's got a podium.
No. But we at least we did each get a point this weekend, which is better than
exactly.
It could have been.
29 and 24. 25, sorry.
25? Yeah, I was going to say. How can I lose a point to you when we both got one? Shocking. Shocking. Race rating, Jamie? I think it was saved by the moment at the end,
it was,
wasn't it?
I was a bit worried that we would have nothing to talk about on this podcast, and yeah. Then the McLarens crashed.
Because the podcasts aren't great when we're just talking about strategy, are they?
Yeah.
This person pit before this today. Person, that no, person got didn't. A 3 second undercut.
I did more maths than you.
I'm going to say six.
That little fight, yeah, we're going to talk about that race for years.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it a great race, does it?
But a six feels harsh. I'll give it a 6.5.
Really? Really?
It was intriguing, and then we had a flashpoint, which, you know, that's not bad. I'm happy with that.
No, I suppose. Fair enough. Lewis
Hamilton killed a groundhog.
He did accidentally kill a groundhog, yeah.
Did you see how down he was in his press conference?
No, I didn't, but...
He was
I
love animals, so I'm really sad.
Yeah. My mum even said that. She was like, oh, but if it had been anyone else, they'd be, like, still a bit disappointed. But Lewis would be so sad about that.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, he will be. He reminded me of Seb with the seagulls here all those years ago. Brilliant interview.
Oh, fantastic.
Brilliant interview. Have we got anything else to add, Jamie? I think we've rattled through everything we needed to.
I think we've done well.
Yeah. I assume we won't be back this week with another episode, but we might
do
a couple next week.
2 weeks' time, isn't it?
Austria 2 weeks, and then we've got Silverstone the week after that, and then we've got 2 weekends off for some reason before the last two before the summer break. So it's going to be a little all over the show. Get yourself subscribed, people. We're slowly seeing a wee trickle of more people coming in. We're at 922 subs. We're 78 away. I'm hoping, now I've finally moved and I've got stuff sorted and hopefully pretty much everything's in place, I'm going to try and post up more polls and more stats and things like that for you guys that we're going to try and feature in the podcast as well. We really want to try and make a big push towards 1K. Before the summer break, I hope. But thank you all so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure, like I said, get yourself subscribed, please. Let us earn money that Google then can't claim for themselves. They still put ads on all the podcasts, so yeah, drop us a sub on YouTube. And we will be back next week to, well, we might preview Austria. We might do kind of a bit of a roundup show before then. Either way, it's going to be a good one.